Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Ellie MacArthur. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Friday, January 16th, the Great Lakes Museum is hosting a screening of the documentary Last Boat on the Lake, produced at Dalhousie University by Hannah Harrison. The film explores the lives of those who make their living on the Great Lakes, offering audiences a closer look at where their fish really comes from. Last Boat on the Lake follows the Great Lakes commercial fishing industry, one of the largest freshwater fisheries in the world. The documentary features Queen's researchers and fishing families just along the shoreline from Prince Edward County. The families featured in the film, along with the filmmakers, will be available for a Q&A following the screening. I spoke with visitor experience manager Claire Notman from the Great Lakes Museum about the event. Well, to start us off, why did the Great Lakes Museum choose Last Boat on the Lake to screen? What made this film stand out?
So this documentary is really interesting. So our mission is to connect people to the history and heritage of the Great Lakes, not just of the Kingston area, but the Great Lakes as a whole. And so this documentary is about the commercial fisheries that are on the Great Lakes. And I don't know about you, but I didn't know that before learning about this documentary. I didn't know that just up the shoreline in Prince Edward County, there is a commercial fishery that has been run by a family for generations. And that kind of goes all across the Great Lakes. There's these fisheries that are certainly getting smaller than they used to be, but that have been around for decades that very few of us know about.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there, this is happening just up the lake from us. I was wondering if you could dive a bit more into what makes this film relevant for Kingstonians and why we should be learning more about the Great Lakes commercial fisheries.
So I think this is an important film for Kingstonians and Canadians, because how often do you think about where your food comes from? We know, food, farm food is very kind of familiar to us. We know where those types of things come from. But the last time you ate like local fish, like a perch or a pickerel, that came from a local fishery just up the shoreline in Prince Edward County, most likely. And so I think we start to forget where our food comes from. And if we don't start to think about those things or how long those things have been kind of providing subsistence for not only us, but for Indigenous peoples for millennia, we're going to let them disappear. And I'm not sure that that's the best thing for the Great Lakes or the best thing for us as a community.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And you mentioned this topic was kind of new for you, too, before seeing the film. I was wondering what kinds of conversations you're hoping this event sparks for people in Kingston and other Great Lakes cities.
I hope this film kind of brings attention to the commercial fisheries on the Great Lakes, for one. They make up one of the world's largest freshwater commercial fisheries. Again, something I wasn't aware of, and I think most people aren't. I think it also highlights the health of the Great Lakes. These commercial fisheries are starting to shrink or disappear because of invasive species, like the zebra mussel, because of environmental changes in the weather. As the weather gets more harsh, it's more difficult to fish, and that these fisheries are actually having a hard time encouraging younger generations to be part of this work, because it's very hard work. It is unpredictable work, but it's really important work.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could also speak to how this relates to the mission of the Great Lakes Museum. We're always talking about, you know, the Keewaytin and the ships and the museum itself, but I was wondering if you could speak a bit to how this film about commercial fisheries kind of relates to your guys' mission.
So our mission is to connect people to the history and heritage of the Great Lakes. And so this is an important part of Great Lakes heritage. It's really interesting that in the film, there was also a collaboration with the Saugeen Ojibwe Nation, which is located on the on Lake Huron, and they have their own independent fishery. And so not only are settler fisheries highlighted, but Indigenous histories are highlighted and fisheries are highlighted. And this was a collaboration between not just Dalhousie University, but Queen's University researchers are on this film. So it's a really great kind of local connection.
This isn't just a screening. You guys also have some special guests. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that opportunity.
Yeah, so we do have some special guests. We're very lucky. Hannah Harrison, who is an assistant professor and the filmmaker, she will be at the screening to answer questions. And we're also going to have four of the fishing families from Prince Edward County come and kind of talk about their life on the lake, what it's like to work at a commercial fishery, the struggles they're facing, and answer any questions people in the audience that might have.
Awesome. And what are you hoping audiences walk away with after this screening?
I hope people just walk away with an appreciation for how hard this work is, where our food comes from, and how important it is to protect the health of the lakes and those that live off the lakes.
Awesome. And how can folks attend and learn more?
So this is happening on Friday, January 16th, starting at 7. Doors open at 6:30. You can buy tickets on our website, greatlakesmuseum.ca, or tickets will be available at the door, and they are $20.
That was Visitor Experience Manager Claire Notman with the Great Lakes Museum, speaking about their upcoming screening of Last Boat on the Lake. The event takes place Friday, January 16th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Great Lakes Museum located at 55 Ontario Street. For more information and tickets, visit greatlakesmuseum.ca. In a message directly from the City of Kingston, beginning January 14th, the Market Wing Cultural Space at Kingston City Hall will host A History Exposed, The Enslavement of Black People in Canada, a traveling exhibition created by the Canadian Museum of Immigration at Pier 21. In partnership with Dr. Afua Cooper and the Black Cultural Center for Nova Scotia. The exhibition will remain on view until May 22nd, 2026. For many, Canada's connection to slavery is understood primarily through the Underground Railroad. A History Exposed brings to light a lesser-known history, the over two centuries when Black people were enslaved in the territories that would become Canada. Through individual biographies, archival records, and historical context, the exhibition explores who the enslaved people were, who enslaved them, and how this legacy continues to shape our country today. Presented across seven double-sided panels, the exhibition offers a space for visitors to confront Canada's history of enslavement and reflect on its ongoing social and cultural impacts. City Curator Melissa Cruz states, quote, "Hosting this exhibition is an important opportunity for our community to engage with a truth that has long been overlooked in Canadian history. By acknowledging the realities of enslavement in Canada, we take a meaningful step toward understanding the roots of anti-Black racism and creating a more inclusive and informed society." A History Exposed was developed with guest curator Dr. Afua Cooper, one of Canada's foremost scholars of Black history and enslavement, whose research and writing, including her landmark book, The Hanging of Angelique, have shaped national conversations about race, history, and justice. Dr. Cooper emphasizes that recognizing the history of slavery in Canada is essential to understanding the full story of the nation's development and to honoring the lives of those who endured enslavement. Again, the exhibit is on view January 14th to May 22nd, 2026 in the Market Wing Cultural Space at City Hall, 216 Ontario Street. Hours are Tuesday to Friday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., and admission is free. Once again, that was a message directly from the City of Kingston on a new exhibit at City Hall. In another message directly from the city, Big Ideas Wanted, applications open for the 2026 Mayor's Innovation Challenge. Big ideas start here. If you know a post-secondary student with a passion for making Kingston better, encourage them to apply for the 2026 Mayor's Innovation Challenge. Offered in partnership with Queen's University, St. Lawrence College, and the Royal Military College, the Mayor's Innovation Challenge invites current and recently graduated students to turn bold ideas into real-world solutions that strengthen our community and shape the future of Kingston. The winning teams will have an opportunity to gain valuable experience through the Summer Company Program and a $10,000 prize sponsored by Bell to advance their idea, or a chance to turn their idea into a business venture with admission to the Queen's Founders and Innovators Initiative, and the opportunity to unlock up to $4,000 in seed funding, along with a chance to compete in their pitch competition with a prize pool of up to $80,000. Mayor Brian Patterson says, quote, "I'm proud to kick off 2026 by opening applications for the 9th edition of the Mayor's Innovation Challenge. Year after year, this initiative highlights the creativity and drive of Kingston's post-secondary students. I'm looking forward to seeing how this new group of innovators brings forward bold ideas, addresses local priorities, and helps shape an even stronger future for our city," end quote. Students are asked to submit a 2 to 3 minute video outlining an innovative project that improves quality of life for Kingston residents or introduces new approaches to delivering municipal services. Teams with proposals that are shortlisted will be invited to present their ideas at the pitch competition on March 20th. The competition will be at City Hall to a panel of leaders with expertise in municipal government entrepreneurship and innovation. Some key dates: interested participants can register for the following workshop: Tuesday, February 10th, 4 to 5:30 p.m. at Mitchell Hall Event Commons, 69 Union Street. You can also join online, registering on Zoom. Friday, March 6th, deadline for proposals at 11:59 p.m. Monday, March 9th, shortlisted teams are invited to the pitch competition. And Friday, March 20th, student pitch competition at City Hall. Don't miss your chance to help shape the future of Kingston. Apply now and turn your bright idea into reality. Learn more about the Mayor's Innovation Challenge on Get Involved Kingston or by emailing mic@cityofkingston.ca. Once again, that was another message directly from the City of Kingston on this year's Mayor's Innovation Challenge. One more message directly from the city this evening: downtown event parking is closer than you think. Planning to head downtown to cheer on the Kingston Frontenacs, to enjoy a concert at Slush Puppy Place or show at the Grand Theater, or to check out Springer Market Square? There are plenty of affordable municipal parking options within a short walk. Recent parking studies show that municipal parking garages and nearby lots regularly have space available during events. Surface lots, on-street parking, and transit add to the mix, giving people more ways to get downtown depending on their plans. The city's new downtown events parking page is now live, giving people a clearer picture of where to park and how close those spots really are to event venues. The page brings event parking details together in one place, including an interactive map showing approximate walking times from nearby parking lots and garages to Slush Puppy Place, Springer Market Square, and the Grand Theater, a link to parking lot and garage details including each site's maximum capacity, affordable flat evening and event parking rates by location, a live camera feed on available spots at the Hanson and Chown parking garages, transit and park ride options, active transportation is a great way to skip the parking spot search, on-street parking, and honk payment information. Know before you go, visit cityofkingston.ca/eventparking for more information. This has been Christina Laurie with your headlines for this evening. Next up is Henry Walker with your CFRC campus news.
This is the Campus Beat on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm Henry. Here are the latest updates from campus and community here at Queen's University. Queen's University has announced a proposed partnership with Bell Canada to develop a national artificial intelligence supercomputing facility in Kingston. According to reporting published earlier this month, the proposal would see Queen's take a leading role in research design, data governance, and academic use of the system, while Bell would oversee construction and technical infrastructure. The project has been submitted for consideration under the federal government's Sovereign Computing Infrastructure Program. If approved, the facility would significantly expand Canada's domestic computing capacity and support research in artificial intelligence, climate modeling, health sciences, and national data security. University representatives say the project could also strengthen Kingston's position as a regional research hub and attract additional academic and industry partnerships. In additional campus news, Queen's has confirmed that it exceeded its fundraising target for the 2025 United Way campaign, raising more than $500,000. The funds were raised through payroll deductions, retiree contributions, and voluntary donations across the university community. The money will support United Way programs in Kingston and surrounding areas, including housing support, food security initiatives, and mental health services. University officials described the campaign as one of the most successful in recent years. Here at CFRC, the station has launched the 2026 Airwave YGK Musician in Residence program, aimed at supporting local and student musicians in Kingston. The program, funded in part by the City of Kingston and the Kingston Arts Council, will provide selected artists with access to rehearsal spaces, broadcast opportunities, professional recording support, and live performance events. Musicians selected for the residency will also participate in workshops and on-air interviews throughout the year. Applications are currently under review, with recipients expected to be announced later this month. Turning back to academics in the university, Queen's University is continuing the rollout of a new digital academic planning platform designed to consolidate course registration, degree tracking, and timetable planning into a single system. The university says the platform is intended to reduce administrative barriers for students and provide clearer access to academic requirements and scheduling information. Additional features are expected to be introduced later this year following pilot testing. Looking ahead to events on campus, Grant Hall will host the Dunning Trust Lecture on Thursday, January 15th, featuring political philosopher Dr. Jansen Stanley. The lecture, titled Fascist Erasures, will examine contemporary political discourse and historical memory. The event is open to students and members of the public. In broader Kingston community news, a new venue called Bottoms Up has opened downtown, making the city's first dedicated gay bar in more than a decade. The opening has been noted as a significant addition to Kingston's nightlife and LGBTQ inclusive spaces. Once again, I've been Henry with your Queen's Campus Beat here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, January 12th. Daytime high of 1 degree with a 66% chance of light snow in the forecast, dropping down to minus 2 overnight. Tuesday, January 13th, daytime high of 3 degrees, feeling closer to minus 5 with the wind chill, overnight low of 0. Wednesday, January 14th, the start of a cold snap here in the city of Kingston. It'll be warm-ish during the day. Daytime high of 3, but feeling closer to minus 3 with the wind chill factored in, but dropping down to a very chilly minus 16 overnight. Thursday, January 15th, daytime high of minus 11, but with the wind chill, it's going to feel closer to minus 20, a sunny but very chilly day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, January 16th, daytime high of minus 10, overnight low of minus 12. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, January 17th, high of 0, and it'll actually feel a degree warmer than that, a real temperature feel of 1 degree, dropping down to minus 8 overnight. Sunday, January 18th, daytime high of minus 3, overnight low of minus 14. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, January 19th, daytime high of minus 4. But folks, it's going to be cold, wind chill making it feel closer to minus 15 with a 60% chance of light snow. This week's City of Kingston Traffic Report has very little to report, but I do want to remind our listeners that the full winter parking restrictions went into effect on January 1st. During January and February, overnight on-street parking is not permitted, no matter the weather conditions. That will change in March, where overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it, so think particularly snowy or icy evenings. When restrictions are in place, parking on city streets is prohibited from 1 a.m. to 7 a.m. On the streets surrounding Kingston General Hospital, the ban runs from 12 a.m. to 7 a.m. Vehicles left on the street during bans are subject to ticketing and towing. To learn more about parking restrictions, how they work, and to stay informed, you can visit the City of Kingston website.
This is Christina Laurie coming back in with your CFRC events and concerts calendars for the upcoming week. On Wednesday, January 14th, the Grad Club hosts an open stage drag show at 8 p.m. Earlier in the evening, you can catch karaoke at Jersey's at 7, Timeout Bar at 8, and The Mansion at 9, plus trivia at Wild Wings at 7:30. On Thursday, January 15th, the Kingston Public Market returns to Springer Market Square from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. At 2 p.m., Douglas Library hosts the opening of Hopes and Fears for Art, an exhibition on printing arts and crafts from around the globe. The evening includes board game night at Jersey's at 5, followed by 2026 Dunning Trust Lecture at Grand Hall at 6:30, featuring Dr. Jason Stanley speaking on fascist erasures. Trivia fans have plenty of options with Riverhead at 7, the Grad Club and Something in the Water at 8, and Queen's Pub at 9, plus karaoke at Tiernanog starting at 9 p.m. as well. On Friday, January 16th, we have trivia at Wild Wings Kingston at 7, a 90s party at Something in the Water at 7, and late-night sing-alongs with country karaoke at The Buckle and karaoke at Daft Brewing, both starting at 9. On Saturday, January 17th, the Kingston Public Market runs from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Later in the evening, we have some burlesque with capital T's at The Broom Factory starting at 8. On Sunday, January 18th, start your day at the Memorial Center Farmers Market from 9 to 1. And you can end the weekend with trivia at The Merchant at 8 and late-night karaoke at The Toucan at 10:30. That wraps up your upcoming events. Now let's dive into some concerts coming up this week. On Wednesday, January 14th, catch Whiskey Smoke at The Buckle at 7:30 p.m., plus another open mic at Hotel Wolf Island at 7:30 p.m. On Thursday, January 15th, get an early start to the evening with Tim Lowton at The Coven at 5 p.m., followed by Tyler Brett Forks at Lakeside Bar and Grill and Ted Lalonde at Time Out, both at 7 p.m. For a big ticket show, Julian Taylor with Logan States hits the stage at the Kingston Grand Theater at 7:30 p.m. The night keeps rolling with Hugh Christopher Brown, Joey Wright, and Jason Mercer at Hotel Wolf Island, Lucanus Pennell at Musiki at 8, and the Friendly Frogs Freak Show at the Toucan at 9:30. Friday, January 16th is packed with live music all over town. It gets going with Christopher Jackson at the Toucan at 5 p.m., Wildcard at Timeout at 6, and the Jack DeKaiser Band at the Coven at 7. Also at 7, Lucanus Pell plays Lakeside Bar and Grill. Later in the evening, catch Mike Guinea and Friends at Hotel Wolf Island at 8, Mellow Lily at Tiernanog at 9, and late night shows from Squid Pistol at Royal Tavern 2.0, The Oreos at The Merchant, and Overrated at The Toucan, all starting around 10:30 p.m. Saturday, January 17th might be the busiest night of the week. There's Jack DeKaiser Band back at the Coven, plus Gerald McGrath at the Embassy, David Shooter at the Social YGK, Maduro Lads at Time Out, and Henry Taylor with Monique Montgomery at Hotel Wolf Island, all starting at 7 p.m. At 7:30, Mellow's Chantuary performs at St. John the Apostle. Later on, the Rugrats album release party and guitar battle at the Mansion at 8, Neil Carter at Tiernanog at 9, and China Cat Riders at the Toucan at 10:30. And on Sunday, January 18th, closing out the week, the afternoon includes Soulfire at the Coven and Chris Kaguire at McKinnon Brothers Brewery, both at 1 p.m. At 2:30, Tom Allen and Friends present J.S. Batch's Long Walk in the Snow at the Isabel. The evening wraps up with Eric and Megan at the Coven at 5, and open mic with Steve G plus Derek Meredith at Time Out starting at 7 p.m. Once again, those are some concerts coming up around town this week. For CFRC's full events and concerts calendars, you can head to CFRC.ca. Have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar? Head to CFRC.ca or check out the link tree in our bio on Instagram at CFRC Music. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from Juno-nominated Maple Blues Award-winning local artist Miss Emily's new album, The Medicine, released on November 7th. Produced by Grammy winner Colin Linden, the album blends soul, blues, and roots with an all-star lineup, including players from Bob Dylan and Keb Mo's bands. Pairing her thunderous voice with songs of truth and resilience, Miss Emily channels two decades of raw experience into music that heals and uplifts. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on the Instagram. In the meantime, stream The Medicine by Miss Emily on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Stand Together, Band Together, here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Welcome to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9 FM. Who's ready to dive into a little grammar today? I've always had a love of reading, of languages, but I'll admit that my English grammar education in South Porcupine wasn't exactly top tier. I don't think it was until I studied Latin at university when textbooks started breaking down concepts like modals and declensions and past perfect tense that everything really started to click, and I felt like I could put names to how the pieces fit together. I think grammar is often something that is taken for granted in our education, especially if English is our first language. There's an assumption and an expectation that we'll pick up the rules naturally, and as a result, I think certain lessons get glossed over. With that in mind, I'm going to include a few basic definitions here. This is not to be pedantic, but because having a clear understanding of what these elements are and how they function will make us more confident and effective writers. Jumping into specifics, today I want to speak about adjectives and adverbs. Stephen King has a famous quote where he says, "The road to hell is paved with adverbs." It's a dramatic phrase, but it can hit close to home for some writers. Adjectives and adverbs, of course, exist for reason. They're one of the 8 core parts of speech in the English language, which includes nouns, pronouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs, preposition, conjunction, and interjection. Adjectives and adverbs can be easily overdone, becoming filler when an author doesn't know the right word to put down, doesn't feel confident in their description, or simply falls into a trap of redundancy. Today, we're going to talk about how to spot that habit, why it happens, and most importantly, what to do about it. Okay, so let's start with a quick overview. What is a noun? A noun is a part of speech that signifies person, place, or thing. They can be improper, which are general words for things like book and cat, or proper, names of people and places like John or Kingston, Ontario. Nouns can also be tangible, which are things you can touch, or intangible, things like feelings and concepts, honesty, anger. Verbs, on the other hand, indicate action or state of being in sentences. Being or doing. He rode his bike. She is a surgeon. Bill ate supper. Bill has 3 pairs of shoes. Adjectives are words like large, loud, or sturdy that modify nouns. Sturdy fence, the large hill. Adverbs are words that modify verbs, adjectives, other adverbs, or even entire sentences. For example, really, quickly. L-Y is a common one, but it's not just as simple as that. But examples are the really fast car, he ran quickly, she loved him very much. Those are all valid and useful descriptions. But if you start using really and very in every sentence, you start to water down your writing and make it really boring and repetitive for your reader. It's sort of the written equivalent to what we do in everyday speech when, for example, we trip up over our words or we're trying to think of the right thing to say, and so we interject something with like, or literally, very, totally, etc., etc. So there's a few different reasons why we tend to overuse adverbs. In general, it's because they are convenient. They can be a placeholder when we're not quite sure what we want to say. Maybe it's a lack of confidence in the description in that moment. Maybe you are just mentally tapped out and you just don't want to search your mental catalog for a better word in that moment, in which case highlight it, make sure you know that you want to go back and change it later. Sometimes it's a lack of confidence in yourself. And so, like a lot of us anxious people, this can be a problem in our speaking as well, where we over-explain something in an attempt to ensure that there is no chance that someone will misunderstand what we're saying. So let's take a closer look at how and why this happens. So a first problem that we can face is not knowing how to show and therefore telling. We've talked about showing and telling before. So this is where the context or dialogue is not strong enough on its own. And so we start telling the reader what they should be seeing or feeling or hearing in the moment. This could be John was angry and Sally was upset. It gets the point across, but it's flat and obviously less interesting to the reader. Where is the emotional tension in that sentence? Show me. Some other cringeworthy examples. Why don't you come over here and sit by me? She asked flirtatiously. How could you write that in a better way? Why don't you come over and sit by me? She asked, batting her eyelashes. In this case, you're giving the reader a visual. Visuals are almost always stronger. Even though we're using more words, more words don't necessarily mean worse when they are more impact. A couple other examples, said angrily is not as impactful as bellowed or snarled or growled, and asked suspiciously is weaker than studied her through narrowed eyes. Here's an exercise for this one. Let's choose an emotion or an adjective. For example, sadness or sad, angry, anger, joy, frustration. And I want you to write about it without naming it directly. So we'll spend 5 minutes writing a short scene or description that shows this emotion through your character's actions, dialogue, body language, or setting. We'll be right back. All right. So that is one little example of how you can practice showing versus telling. In our writing group last week at Word Labs, we played around with a prompt, which was describe someone being itchy without using the word itchy. And it was a really interesting mental exercise to imagine what are the inner sensations that somebody might be experiencing in that moment, and what would an outside observer see to know that that person was itchy. So you can do those with emotions as well, especially those kind of nuanced or complicated ones. Like if someone is really upset but not trying to show it, how do you convey to the reader that maybe they're not doing the best job, or that someone who's really observant is picking up on it? Problem number two is when you don't have faith in your writing. Maybe you are showing us stuff, but you're not sure if that's getting the point across. And so you're adding more and more description, tossing in adverbs just to be safe. The power was out, leaving the cavernous living room dark and dreary, making it very, very hard to see. That's ridiculous, but you know what I mean. And lastly, redundancy. I had a boss who used to jokingly talk about the Department of Redundancy department, and that's always stuck in my head. So examples of redundant adverbs: whispered quietly, screamed loudly, ran quickly, nodded his head, shouted loudly. Redundant adjectives: a free gift, past history, end result, unexpected surprise, completely finished. Things that could be written more succinctly and with more impact. Then you can combine redundant adjectives and adverbs. The gift was very unique, extremely perfect, totally silent. Dark and stormy night. There, we've talked about that one before. Presumably night is dark, unless there's some weird reason like an asteroid or the sun hurtling towards Earth that causes it not to be. So good rule of thumb, take your adverb or your adjective out of the sentence. If it doesn't change the meaning of the sentence, it probably doesn't belong there. So let's put that into practice with an exercise. I'll put on a couple tunes for you. If you're listening on the podcast, just press pause. I'm going to give you a short scene and I'm going to ask you to rewrite it. And when you rewrite it, pay close attention to your word choices. Your goal is to rely on precise adjectives and strong verbs, not adverbs, to carry the meaning. So first thing I want you to do is trim anything that feels unnecessary and focus on showing how the characters feel and act instead of telling us outright. So here's the sentence. Ryan whispered quietly to Jamie in the dimly lit hallway. Jamie looked nervously at the closed door, then walked quickly towards the exit. And again, Ryan whispered quietly to Jamie in the dimly lit hallway. Jamie looked nervously at the closed door, then walked quickly towards the exit. As you revise, keep a few things in mind. First, spot and remove redundant adverbs and adjectives to rewrite the scene so that you're not telling the reader what's happening, so that the word choices are revealing the character's emotions and actions. Make every word earn its place. And we'll be back in a moment.
You call
Okay, we've done some work on how to get rid of adjectives and adverbs, but as I mentioned at the beginning, adverbs and adjectives in and of themselves are not bad things. Sometimes we need them, but we just need to use them wisely. That includes being selective and careful with your word choice. Thesauruses are your friend. I could go on another tangent about misuse of thesauruses. Make sure when you pick a word from a thesaurus that you actually look up the definition of that word as well, so that you're not just putting in something that sounds good but doesn't actually convey your meaning. I really like wordhippo.com. I don't know, I just found it's well organized and has a really healthy list of options for you. Be selective in your use of descriptors. Unless you're being intentionally vague because the genre or tone calls for it, horror, mystery, or something dreamlike, for example, or maybe the character themselves is waking up and they don't have their glasses on and so things are blurry, be more specific with your wording. Precision sharpens the image and pulls the reader in instead of gesturing vaguely at what you're trying to say. Some examples: melodic instead of pretty. When you say melodic, instantly I'm like, okay, you're talking about music. Grumbling instead of grumpy. It just adds some personality and character to the description. Chafing instead of uncomfortable. You can be uncomfortable in a lot of different ways, but chafing gives you that immediate, like, ugh, kind of feeling. So what you want to do is put an image in the reader's head whenever possible. Adverbs are okay to use when it alters the meaning of your sentence. If you can get rid of the adverb, do so. If not, make sure that you're using the best adverb you can, or look at verbs and adjectives to help get your meaning across. Some examples of when using an adverb actually alters the meaning of a sentence: the restaurant changed the menu recently and diners were not happy. In that case, recently is telling you something that is moving the story forward. Presumably, diners liked the previous menu and now something's changed. So that recently is creating some drama and some momentum. She entered the room silently so as not to wake her partner. I would say in that example, you could say she snuck into the room, or she crept into the room, or she tiptoed, but silently is helping you say something there. And then finally, the suspect drives a dark green sedan. So context, audience, and the character do play into that. Police officer or detective that's trying to chase down a suspect wants to know those basics, like what is the color of the car, what is the make, the model, the year, does it have any dents or a broken windshield or something like that. They're not going to be interested in, for example, if that car was stolen, maybe the description that the thief gave of this car would be very different. The car caught his eye like an emerald jewel from across the street, the vehicle of his childhood dreams. It's getting into your characters' heads and into the mindset of your story and appreciating that there are different perspectives that will require different types of observation and description. To finish off today, I'm going to give you a little bit of homework. I don't do this often, but this is something that you can apply to work you've already written. If you're not actively writing a piece right now, just go to the nearest book on your shelf, take a look at a paragraph, open it to a random page and take a look at a paragraph. So dig through your writing or a piece of writing that you find and highlight every adverb. Then ask yourself, how many adverbs did you find? How many adverbs do you have per 100 words? And obviously you can expand this, reviewing a couple of pages of writing. How many adverbs per 1,000 words? Then again, remove each adverb and ask whether doing so changes the meaning of the sentence. If it does change the meaning, you can keep it, or you can ask yourself if there is a better word choice there. If it does not change the meaning, can you rewrite the sentence without that adverb? Now compare the original sentences with the adverbs intact to the new sentences that don't include any adverbs, and ask yourself which one feels better.
shows under my skin.
That'll take us to the end of this week's show. Thank you again, as always, for tuning in to Word Labs Out Loud, and we will see you next week with more writing fun.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town.